Hi, I'm Marlena, coming to you from the 53rd Annual Conference and Convention of the American Council of the Blind. You're about to hear the program for the Sight and Sound Impaired Committee, affectionately known as SASE. Karen Campbell ably chairs that committee, and the next voice you hear will be Karen Campbell.
My name is Karen Campbell. I chair the Sight and Sound Impaired SASE Committee. Today's program is on deafblind in the workforce, what we do and how we do it. One of our speakers has come around to meet with each of you, and that's part of how things are done in the community. We have two speakers with us today. Both have extensive experience in the field. Tammy Burke, who heads deafblind programs at the Seattle White House, has been in the field for over 20 years. A.J. Granda, who is the director of deafblind education and retreat coordinator at the Seattle White House. She is a mother advocate for social justice and has also been in the field for a long time. I give you Tammy Burke and A.J. Granda.
Do you want me to start?
Whichever one of you want.
Hi, I am AJ, and it's been nice to meet all of you, and we are here to open this presentation with some questions from you first. So the first question is, why do you think Tammy and I came around to meet you individually? Why do you think we did that? Anybody want to raise a hand and give an answer?
Ginger. Because
you
wanted to know who's in the room.
Oh, because we wanted to see who you wanted to see who was in the room. Oh, okay. So do you want me to repeat that again? No, just go ahead. Arthur already repeated. Okay, great. So we're just having some communication technical difficulties. But in any case, that is part of the answer. That is true. Really, I wanted to meet each of you. I could have stayed here with my interpreter, but I think there's another hand in the back.
Also, to get an idea of why we're here based on what we've been working on, what we've been motivation.
To get an idea of why we're here, and maybe you all are here as motivational speakers.
We need the wireless too. The wireless needs to go around people who are speaking, or else the recording won't work.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is Tammy, and I'm happy to do that, so I'll be the microphone person.
Yeah, Tammy, I will be the microphone person. We've got a hardwired mic over where I am, and the wireless mic does need to go around.
So do I need a microphone?
Yes.
So you need to be on the hard.
Michael, the podium, yes. AJ.
Got it.
So you want a chair over here? Bye-bye.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to... Kitty, can you just, if it's okay with AJ, if she could move over, because the mic is on a cord. The mic is on a cord.
Arthur, it may pull out.
Really?
Yeah. Pull out.
So actually, Karen, this is Tammy. Karen and Marlena, would you guys mind scooting over a couple of chairs to your left?
Absolutely.
That would be wonderful.
I need to.
You can stay right. Well, I'm going to move this chair over here then by the sound system. How about? Here, Marlena, can I give you a hand over to your chair? It's right here.
I can't get too far away.
No worries.
Okay, great.
Okay. Again, I am AJ, and one of the ground rules for communication is when you raise your hand, we need you to give us your name first. That's a very important thing for deaf culture, right? And for blind people as well. And the second thing is I wanted to let you know that I am a deafblind person myself, and I do use an interpreter. And right now, you hear the voice of an interpreter who is speaking for me, who is right here. And the other interpreter that is standing behind me is here, and she has her hand on my back at all times to feed me visual environmental information so that I know who has raised their hand, if someone is laughing in the audience, or someone has fallen asleep, if somebody's coming in and out of the room. Great. So that will give you an idea or a picture of who is standing in front of you in the room. But back to your question about why we met each of you individually, both answers were correct. And I just wanted to add something else to that. One of the reasons that we meet you all individually is to give you, for me, to give you information through touch, not through my interpreter. Okay. I like live direct communication with people. And hearing people can hear the voice of people and identify who's speaking through the tone of the voice. Right? But as a deafblind person, one of the ways I identify people might be through my interpreter. Right? And to me, that isn't really live, real direct communication. What I want is real direct personal communication with you through touch, and that helps me make a connection, a personal connection, and engagement with you. Right, Tammy? Okay, so that's the reason. So thank you for your first exposure to deafblind culture. I know that this presentation is about the Lighthouse for the Blind and our programs that we have there related to deafblind employment and how that program works, what it looks like, right? That is what we advertise. And Tammy, would you like to start with some of that?
This is Tammy. You guys, hello. And I'm a hearing-sighted person, just FYI. I've been an interpreter and worked at the deafblind program for the Lighthouse for many years, as Karen said, over 20 years. We have a question for you, too. Another question. Do you all have any specific questions that you would like to have answered today? Is there any specific information you're looking for that you want out of this workshop? And there's a couple hands. So I'm going to walk around, and I'm going to say, Ray, you first. I'm going to hand you the microphone.
Okay. This is Ray, and I would be curious about the kinds of jobs that people who are deafblind in your programs are doing.
This is Tammy. Thank you very much. And then back here, there was another hand in the back here. Who else? Yes, ma'am. Susan
Bowes. My question is, you were mentioning about having an interpreter behind you while you are doing some other interpretations. How do you, does the interpreter draw in English to you, like, you know, USA letters, or does he draw some other way on your back?
This is Tammy. So there's two questions, and then there's a third one up here for us. So I'm going to go to Melissa.
Hi, this is Melissa from Eugene, Oregon. And my question revolves around folks using support staff like you do, AJ, and how to help employers and people conducting interviews understand support staff and how their role in the work environment.
This is Tammy. Excellent. We will talk about that. And another question?
This is Marcia Farrow from Georgia.
we were able to get a deaf-blind bill passed. We, the blind community, worked hard alongside the deaf-blind to get the bill passed, but unfortunately it is an unmandated, unfunded mandate. So I wanted to ask about some ways that you all have been able to get the funding that's needed, especially to provide the interpreters and the SSPs.
This is Tammy. Great questions. Great questions. So, AJ, do you want to start off? The first answer is really easy. What are some of the jobs that deafblind people do at the Lighthouse and out there in the community that we're aware of?
Hi, I'm AJ here again. So that is a good question. I have a list here. I think you'll be impressed with the diversity of jobs that deafblind people have all over the U.S. I can't read that without my glasses. So, can you?
So this is Tammy. We've got a list here. We have deafblind people who are educators, people who are trainers, people who are machinists, deafblind people who are engineers, deafblind people who are gardeners. And this is not all just at the Lighthouse. This is, you know, the breadth of the community that we're aware of. And there's more that we're not aware of. I know that. Deafblind people who work as accountants, agency directors, fundraisers, IT specialists, tech experts. Y'all are familiar with the National Deafblind Equipment Distribution Program, the NDBEDP. Yeah? A lot of deafblind people work through there, educating and training other deafblind people. They are tech experts. Authors, advocates, business owners, entrepreneurs, artists, program coordinators, motivational speakers, chefs, HR specialists, or managers of other departments in any for-profit business, social workers, and athletes. We know deafblind people in every one of these roles out there. AJ, you want to add?
Yeah. And also, AJ here, and I just thought of a few more. There are many deafblind professors, college professors. There are many people that work in stores, which is very cool. And I know another deafblind guy who is a friend who just moved to California, and he set up his own business in interior design. So it seems that his business is doing very well, and I'm very impressed with what he's done.
So this is Tammy again. Those are just some examples of the employment opportunities that deafblind people have fulfilled. How now do deafblind people do that? I was talking with a friend at the Lighthouse, a deafblind woman, and she said, well, you have a brain, and there's a cerebral cortex, and this brain, this part of the brain does this function, and this part of the brain does this, and this part of the brain does this. The point is, it's the same as how anybody else does work out there. Oh, with the exception of a few accommodations and a few bits of awareness that need to happen and take place. One of those pieces is power and privilege. And AJ, you want to talk about that?
Power and privilege? Yes, here, AJ here again. Yeah, I've been thinking about that, and it's a huge topic, and I could teach a whole workshop on that all day, just on that subject. But in terms of power and privilege, let me back up a little bit and talk about language use with deafblind people. I'm going to give you two words, the word help and the word support. These are two hugely different words. In general, people tend to say to deafblind people, oh, can I help you with that? Can I help you at your workplace? However, the better word to use would be support. So, for example, how may I support you? What sort of supports can I provide to you? What sort of supports would you need from me? That would be the better language to use. But between those two, power and privilege, is there something else you had to add, Tammy? Do you mind adding a little bit more?
This is Tammy. Yeah, there is a huge gap. As everybody here familiar with the words power, privilege, oppression? We speak freely about these things. It's not something that people intentionally do, but it happens out there. It happens by default. This world is set up for sighted people. Blind people have the addition of being able to hear still. If you're deaf and blind, what we would do right now is put everybody in here under sleep shades and earphones so you can't see or hear, and just see what that feels like for a minute. It's vastly different. Information is power. Access to information is power. Access to information is how deafblind people can be successful in the work they choose to do. That's that. And that's that privilege piece, too. You know, the privilege piece. We, those of us who can see and hear, or those of us who can hear, maybe can't see, we still have more privilege than folks who are deaf and blind. Having that awareness is the first step to making things truly accessible to people. Lori, you have a hand raised, and we do still have those other questions down. We're not going to forget them, but here's Lori.
I just wanted to add that way too often, in my view, in clients that I've worked with and just in people that I know, I'm sorry, Tammy and I are laughing because my cell phone is ringing for some reason. So I will ignore that. And I derailed myself. Way too often... deafblind people are not getting access to information. They're not getting the incidental information that hearing blind people pick up or sighted and hearing people pick up just in their general discourse of the day. And I come across people all the time who I feel are marginalized even more by the viewpoints of the service providers and the people providing services. And I recently went and was asked to meet with a client somewhere, and the agency that asked me to come in was not impressed because basically I kept saying, when the client returns to work, and they kept saying, if the client returns to work. And I pulled the client aside afterwards and I said, look, I don't know if you picked up on it because I, you know, wasn't sure. And I said, the goal here is you've made it clear you want to return to work. The service provider is saying when. The service provider is saying if you return to work. Your philosophy is when. And the goal here is to help you get to that when point. So that's all.
This is Tammy. Excuse me. Righto, Lori. That's a really good point. And that will give us a segue into one of the other questions. I think, Melissa, it was you who asked about support services and support staff. Support staff and supports available for deafblind people doing their work. There is one of the things that AJ and I said today, or that we wanted to impress upon you today, was, one, the importance of community. And there's a few elements of that that we're going to talk about, because a whole person is a happy person. A person who's got everything they need in their personal life is a productive employee, right? We'll talk about that more. But part of that, and this goes along with the awareness of oppression and privilege, whatnot, are the people who actually provide the services and their awareness of deafblind culture. Deafblind culture is different. Deafblind people do things in a different way. There are things that matter more than other things. I'm going to let AJ talk more about this. AJ is probably chomping at the bit to talk more about this. Yeah.
AJ here. Another word I would like to add is independence. Independent. What does that mean? People might say, I'm independent. I go back and forth to work on my own. I do a lot of things for myself and daily living. But I don't think anyone is really independent. You have to have certain things to really truly become independent. And the point of what I mean by independence in the deafblind context, let me back up. People who are involved in the deafblind community and the deafblind world, meaning are smart people who are able to work, who are able to be mobile on their own. And to me, that is a misconception of what independence truly means when people conceptualize it as that. Deaf-blind people being independent means making decisions on their own, being able to make decisions in whatever position they are in, with or without supports. And that's what true independence means to me for deaf-blind people. Most people just think, you know, it's just work. Is there more you wanted to add, Tammy?
So in thinking about the supports that we have in place for deaf-blind people, for example, at the Lighthouse, and somebody's phone's going off, Marlena, could that be your phone up here? we have an interpreting department. Let me back up a little bit. First of all, and this is another question we should have asked you guys before we started. How many people are familiar with the Seattle Lighthouse for the Blind and what we have up there? Several hands up there. We've got about 300, 350 employees altogether, several locations at our home, Mothership, in Seattle, about 250 employees, about 40 deaf-blind people. We're the largest employer of deaf-blind people that we're aware of in the world. And we've got some tremendous supports in place. It is not cheap. It is not cheap because it costs something to bridge that gap, that communication gap. We got to make the difference. We have to do it. We have an interpreting department. We provide about 500 hours of interpreting per month. That's a lot. That's 6,000 hours per year. For anything from a one-on-one meeting with your supervisor to a monthly group shop meeting, you know, what are the latest updates in the shop, to I'm on the safety committee and I need interpreting there, or everybody else who doesn't sign needs interpreting so that we can all participate together. So we have the interpreting department. We have an employee support specialist. She's our employee support manager, focuses specifically on deafblind employees. She is the liaison between deafblind employees, the HR department, the IT department, external departments, you know, Social Security. We don't do all of that work, but if somebody needs some advocacy to get out there, or they need to develop some skills so that I can be a better advocate for myself, we can give those people, and we can give deafblind people those kinds of supports. So employee support, we just had a company barbecue last weekend, and we hired people we call SSPs, support service providers. They're guides. They're, you know, visual information and guides. We put these things in place, and again, it's not cheap. Our budget for the employee and community services department at the Lighthouse, granted, we serve hearing blind and deaf blind people all together, about $2 million for all of our blind and deaf blind employees. We do fundraising for that. That's mostly from fundraising. About half of that budget is from fundraising. That was a question. Half of that budget is from fundraising, and our goal is that all of that money is fundraised. But we do take, you know, there are profits from our business. We're a nonprofit social enterprise, the Lighthouse is. We sell our products. We do get some profit. Most of that goes back into the work that we do, new machines, etc. A lot of that goes into our deafblind program and our accessibility department and our overall employee and community services. So, let me check notes. There was something I want to talk about, technology, and should we do an interpreter switch? We're going to do an interpreter switch, you guys. Interpreting is a heart. Stop talking. When there are no interpreters, there is no communication. Don't talk. So all those supports are one aspect of support for deafblind people. Technology is another really big piece. AJ, will you talk about some of the tech supports that we have for folks, deafblind people, in all areas of employment?
Okay, sure. Again, this is AJ with a new voice this time to discuss technology with you. The Lighthouse, what we have there, they might not be the cutting edge of today, but we have something called the TTC, the TTC. It means Technology Training Center. We have the Technology Training Center there at the Lighthouse. We have two staff who work in that program. Also, the TTC room, in there we have computers with Braille, Braille displays. We have computers with two screens, especially for all the deafblind workers that we have, employees that we have at the Lighthouse. We have a place where employees can check their email anytime they like. That's where classes are also taught, learning how to use the computers, how to browse the web, how to check email, basic stuff like that, and then all the way up to advanced skills. Also, we have new technology with VSU2, it's called.
BrailleSense U2.
It's a laptop, a Humpen Braille Sense, and that is very cool little machine. It's great. I'm very excited about that. And we partner also with other organizations in order to teach deafblind people how to use that Braille 2 machine. What else do we have? Tammy, what else should I mention? The KP. Okay. At the Lighthouse, it was mentioned we have about 40 deafblind employees there, and there is a system there for them to clock in and clock out when they take breaks. They get two breaks during their shift, and so it's an alarm, a vibrating system, excuse me. And hearing can hear that. People with who can hear that alarm as well. And it's connected to a box's light held like a pager at the side of the waist that'll vibrate and let them know when their breaks start and finish, and when they're supposed to clock in and out. Pretty soon, so they get an idea of when their shift is going to be over. It also gives a little alert for that. I set up the design, too, there for a special emergency alarm at the Lighthouse for folks. For example, if there's a pager going off and it's nonstop, they know they need to exit the building. They need to evacuate. Another example of technology that we have there at the Lighthouse is, we have a Boeing department, such as in the airplane, Boeing, and there are a lot of machines in that department that are designed specifically for people that are deafblind, that they can run the machines on their own without any assistance. There's a group called CNC.
Tammy, you guys know what CNC stands for? Some yeses. Computer Numeric Controlled Machine. It's a machine with a computer. That's it, basically.
Okay, and so it's the one of the first computers that when you hear the word computer, at first you might, what do you visualize? I mean, you visualize things that sighted people deal with. But we've got a computer that is accommodated, makes accommodations for people that are deafblind. What kind of accommodations would I be speaking of? When you've got a computer that needs to be used by a deafblind person, that's going to have a larger screen on it as well as Braille on the computer. And they have to be compatible with that. So that's our goal. You know, deafblind people can do just fine at work with the right accommodations.
So this is Tammy. So those machines out there, these are industrial machines, right? And they come with this little computer monitor. Doesn't work for people who need to be able to see it. Deaf people who have some vision. So we had this really big monitor. This was our idea. And we put it on there and it works. There's JAWS, of course. Everybody's familiar with JAWS. So anybody who's hearing blind, no vision at all, can use these machines. What if you can't see or hear at all? We have Braille displays that we connect up to these things. So we've got these things throughout the whole building. Technology is a huge key to access for people. Huge key. And again, there's money. There's a sign for money. You guys, I'd walk around and I'd show you all the sign for money. So you just rub your fingers together. Just rubbing your fingers here. It's like cash. So, yeah. I mean, it does. There's a price tag associated with making things accessible to deafblind people. Oh, well. You know, it's just, it's part and parcel with what we do. There's a hand raised out here, AJ.
AJ, this is Doug. Question about the Braille 2 machine. You said it was really cool. Could you give me a little bit more information about that, please?
Okay. All right. This is AJ. Now, it is definitely a very cool machine. It's made parts for airplanes. It's used to make parts for airplanes.
The Braille Sense, you wanted more information about?
I'm sorry. We have so many cool machines, I get them mixed up. Sorry about that. Okay. The BS2, the Braille Sense, Braille Sense 2 machine. It's about size of a loaf of bread. You can check your email on it. You can explore the website. You can attach documents to it as well. It's 40 keys. It has 40 keys with Braille on the display, on the keyboard. Cells. Yeah, excuse me, cells. And with the Perkins, it also has the Perkins keyboard that comes with the query.
So this is Tammy. It has either a Perkins or a QWERTY keyboard. You can have your choice of each one.
Okay, go ahead. What's your comment?
The Braille Sense U2. Thank you, Karen. This is Marlena. The Braille Sense U2 is in our exhibit hall. It's the HIMS, HIMS company that makes it. And so they will be here until Thursday. So look for the HIMS booth, and you will see a Braille Sense U2.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's a question in the way back. Yes.
I just wanted to ask, the government today announced the availability of the currency reader program. My name is Venkatesh. And the government announced the currency reader program, and I was just wondering whether, you know, what AJ's thoughts were and whether that was something that was going to be helpful to the deafblind, because it does have a vibrate mode.
Currency reader. So there's a currency reader that's available to folks. AJ. Well, this is Tammy. I'm not familiar with it. How would that help deafblind people? Marlena?
This is Marlena. The way the currency reader works is, and you can also get one here, and if you don't get it here, you won't be able to get one until January. So everybody needs to run to the exhibit hall and get one for free. The way it works is you slide the bill into the device, and you can set it to vibrate. So one vibration is one, two is a $2 bill, etc. Oh, a $5 bill. I just got mine. Not quite sure all how it works yet, but and they did set up that mode for people who are deafblind to use, but of course we are not happy with that, and we are keeping the pressure on them to develop tactile, a paper currency.
This is Tammy. So, little steps. What were they talking about at the AFB breakfast this morning? Little steps, little steps. So, one little step, you think it's a great big thing, that's cool. There's still a long way to go. There's a couple questions. You guys, I want to touch on one more piece of accommodations. We have plenty of time left. But accommodations, we talked about the technology. You know, a Braille display can be $6,000, $8,000, and the technology for computer can be very expensive. There are some very simple things that we can do as well. At the Lighthouse, we have, in every room that we have, there will be a wall that is painted dark blue. The majority of the people who work there, well, we've got choices. We have a dark wall and we have a lighter wall. As you know, in the world of vision loss, everybody is different. Some people do better with bright lights. Some people do better with dimmer lights. It varies for everybody. And when you're working with sign language, which the majority of our deafblind people are, contrast is very important. So I'm a light-skinned person, so I have a uniform. I have one closet in my house that is all dark clothes, navy blue, black, dark green, whatever. Those are the clothes I wear every time I'm with deaf blindness. So that's part of uniform. You know, we have to wear contrasting colors. You have darker skin, you wear lighter skin clothes. That's part of our, it's in our handbook. It's in our handbook. We have walls that are painted dark blue and walls that are painted a nice shade of yellow. So whatever a person prefers, they've got a background ready. Very inexpensive. And, of course, we've got CCTVs, closed caption televisions. We've got, you know, we can switch out any kind of lighting. We have a lighting lab at the Lighthouse, so come and check out. Overhead lighting work best. I don't know what it's called. You know, light that's got the shade below and it's faced upward. What? Torsier lighting, yes, yes. So all different kinds of lighting we have. Simple fix for stuff, you know. It's not all expensive. It's not all expensive. All right, a couple questions. Melissa, you have one.
Yes, so you mentioned that some accommodations are expensive, and I feel like you all are at advantage because you have a corporate culture that supports, you know, doing what's necessary to have the person and allow their contribution. Our goal in our program is to place people in community work, which is often small business. So that piece is not assumed. In fact, it's something we're expected to try to sell, if you will, and to build an understanding of the need for supports, be they human or objects, and the value of the individual. So I guess my question would be, what are some things that you all have done that you find is successful in helping community members to come to an understanding about those things and to understand the value of those things?
This is Tammy looking at AJ. AJ, yep, go ahead.
Okay, I just have a brief comment, but I was thinking, this is AJ here. I was thinking about what supports mean. We are talking about resources, technical support, communicative support, technical. I'm clumping them all together, but they certainly each have a place. And the first thing that came to mind for me was communicative support. You know, deaf-blind way of communicating is through touch, essentially. And, you know, when you think about how sighted people gather information, sighted people or people who can hear, they gather information through their eyes and their ears. How do deaf-blind people take in information? If it's not through their eyes and ears, it's got to be through touch, obviously. So it's very simple in that respect, but a deafblind person needs, in order to be successful at their whatever they do for work, they need access to touch in many ways. Let's do an interpreter switch, okay?
This is Tammy. As AJ mentioned, communication is the most important piece. You know, every year in the Lighthouse, yes, we've been 35 years in the making of this Deafblind program. We started with nothing, nobody who knew anything about it. And over time, we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot. But the key is communication. So if you have, you know, we've got 40 deafblind people at the Lighthouse, and every year at people's annual evaluation, they're asked the question, do you want to look for outside employment? Because as an NIB affiliate, this is something we have to do. Over and over and over again, people say no. Why? Because they have the communication support in place. Number one reason. Putting a deafblind person out there in the middle of a hearing environment is fraught with challenge from the get-go. There's no way around it. And it's going to be harder than if you have like a critical mass of deafblind people. You know, if you have three or four or five deafblind people all working together, people have each other for support. If you're in a place, you guys just imagine, you're all English speakers here, right? You get put into a foreign speaking office environment. And you can communicate with people only through email. Everybody, you know, they've got their programs that can change. Let's say you're in Spain and it's only Spanish. Pretend you don't know any Spanish. And anybody who types anything, they've got a translator program that can translate stuff to English. It's not going to be good. It's not going to be perfect. We know this. But that's the only way you can communicate with people. How effective is that going to be? Oh, I need to go talk to my boss right now. No, this is really urgent. I want to talk to them in person. Can't do it. I can get an interpreter in there, but it generally is a two-week lead time for interpreters. So as much as you can do, at the Lighthouse, we have sign language classes for our employees. Hearing blind people, hearing sighted people, everybody can take sign language classes to work with their coworkers. Sometimes you get to the point where it's just, good morning, how are you? That makes a difference. It makes a huge difference. Or sometimes you have supervisors who can actually do daily business with people on a, you know, on a direct level. So it's communication, and you got to figure out. And the other thing I would say is experiential training. You know, put blindfolds and ear things on somebody and make them do it and just see what that's like. It's different, and you don't know it until you try it. Melissa, does that answer your question? Sort of? Not really?
So I would agree that communication is a paramount tool. However, most community-based employers, small businesses, are not used to hiring employees who come with an entourage, you know, a support staff, a what have you. The experience that we are having is they're confused. What do I do with these extra people? Am I responsible for these extra people? How do I work with these extra people? Am I being rude if I do it this way? And it goes on and on and on and on from there. And at some point, what the experience has been is, even though the business owner is well-meaning, they're trying to be open-minded, they just decide that it's too confusing and it's too much work, and there are a lot of other people out there that are much simpler. So we'll just go do that.
Unfortunate but true. This is Tammy. It's a lot of education. It's a learning curve. It's a big, long learning curve. And in your community, I know you have resources, and then you draw on some of those local resources to come in and give supports and whatnot. And you can only do that for so long, you know. But you got to do it. You got to do it, Lori. Was there another question in the room that didn't get answered, that didn't get asked yet? I thought there was another hand, but there is not, Lori.
This is Lori. Mine isn't a question. Mine is a statement. As first of all, I just want to say NIB, for those who may not know, when Tammy used that, that's National Industries for the Blind. And the Lighthouse in Seattle is an affiliated program of them. This kind of has to do with what Tammy was saying, and then I'm going to add something to what Melissa had said. ACB as a whole supports NIB's facilities, unlike some other organizations. And we wholeheartedly believe in choice when it comes to employment. In addition to that, I would urge every one of you to go and look at your Olmstead plan and see how negatively your Olmstead plan in your state affects blind and deafblind people. Because I can tell you, without even looking at them, it probably has some level of negative impact, whether it be rehabilitation services or integration into the community, because as people with sensory disabilities, we lost. And if we don't start working on it now and pointing out how the Olmstead Act will really deteriorate the level of employment availability to people with sensory disabilities, we're going to lose. And while the Olmstead Act pushes for things like, choice in care, it does not support service providers in many locations.
So this is Tammy. I'm not familiar with the Olmstead Act, but I'm going to look it up now. Yeah. Melissa has, there's a couple of Melissa. I'm going to go over here for one quick second.
This is Ginger. My question's not political. No. I was wondering a little bit more about the pager system that you use for alarms. Is that a regular pager that you have modified or accommodated to work it within a system, or is it a specially designed pager that needs to be set up?
This is Tammy, and I'll go up. Whoops, sorry, I just tapped somebody.
You asked.
It's just saying, Tammy, go. I forget where it's from. It's a commercial product that we buy. It's a commercial product, and it's just a little vibrating. It has a little screen that you can read if you've got any vision at all, that gives you the same information. But basically, it's just this vibration, and then we do we program it. So at this time and this time, you'll get this kind of vibration. If it's an emergency, you'll get a different kind of vibration. So we break it down. You know, the morning bell, break, lunch, afternoon break, finish time. That's a signal that's the same for all of those. But if it's an emergency, that's different. So basically those two things. Previous to that, we had some really low-tech stuff, like an X on the back. X on the back means get out of the building now. Straight line down the back means it's break time. Now, X on the back means get out of the building, but I have my pager, so I generally don't have to rely on hearing people who often forget. And a straight line down the back means you're bleeding, there's blood, or I'm bleeding, and I cannot sign hand over hand with you. So this is new at the Lighthouse. It's very cool. But yeah, it's a commercial product, and we can get you information on that. Ginger has more.
No, I was going to ask. This Ginger again. I was going to ask if it's specifically designed for that, or can any pager be programmed?
That's a good question. This is Tammy, and I do not know the answer to that. But I would
have a high school kid that could learn to use that.
A high school kid who could learn to use that. Yeah, and it's very possible you could program a pager to do that. It's possible. If you want, we can stay in touch, and I can tell you what we have. Cool. And then, Melissa, you had more.
Just for people who may not have heard of the Olmstead Act, your Olmstead plan probably isn't called that. Ours in the state of Oregon is called the K plan. And it's not fun. We're in the middle of a 2-month time study for hour by hour billing based on type of service for employments and day program services. And let me tell you, I manage a program that does that. And I left my office at almost 11 p.m. on Friday trying to do the first 2 weeks worth to redo and correct the stuff that my staff gave me to fit in the new definitions of services. And there was also a lot of time lost because there was literally no place to put the service offered. even though the individual needed the service. So I totally feel your pain. And so if you're looking for that, it's probably not called the Olmsted Plan. It might be called something else. So if you're looking for that, look for things like a in-community preference for services and things like that. That most likely is coming out of the Olmsted Act, which is not all bad, but it's not all great. So, yeah.
This is Tammy. Baby steps all the way. You guys, just thinking about hard of hearing people too. You know, we've talked a lot about deaf, blind people who use ASL as their first language. Hard of hearing people too. We've got a lot of hard of hearing people who work at the White House. We use FM systems. We use microphones at our meetings. I mean, there's some things. Again, an FM system is not cheap. Everybody familiar with an FM system? Anybody? Yes, no. Some folks, yes, some no. Really important piece of what we do. There's lots of other technology that's available out there for folks who are hard of hearing. And when you're out there on the machine shop floor, things are really loud and it doesn't always work as well. But when you're off the floor, there's a lot of things you can do to make communication accessible to hard of hearing people. And again, it's about communication. It's about making sure people get the information in whatever way you can, no matter where you are, whether you've got 40 deafblind people there or you have one deafblind person there. The biggest complaint that we get from deafblind or hard of hearing people who work in an environment, we've got one deafblind person who works in our accounting department, surrounded by hearing people. Biggest complaint, no information. Everybody, whether it's incidental stuff, you know, what'd you do over the weekend, or, wow, we have this new programming system that we have to do, or this is a new process that we're going to follow, and people in passing, you know, I'm on my way to the copy machine, or we're standing around the table stuffing, you know, we're mailing checks, and it's a team thing that they do. There's one, and everybody's talking around the table, except for this one person who doesn't have access to that information. That's the key. That, again, is the key. Communication. Whether it's communication through, you know, whether it's print or whether it's on your computer or whether it's sign language or whether it's touch. Communication, number one. That's the bulk of what we have today. Here's another question.
Yeah, you mentioned the, this is Ray, I'm sorry, you mentioned the hard of hearing issues in that. And just, I know sometimes, it, you know, I think that what I, and it's not a question, it's more of a comment, what I would encourage people to do is just to, you know, make the effort and to include somebody, or make sure that that person, if there's someone that's hard of hearing, has the information they need. I know when, you know, when Karen and I go out to restaurants at times, some places are kind of noisy, and so I always make sure that she, you know, knows that the wait person is there, and that and so I don't, or I won't order for her. I won't do that, but I always make sure she knows that they're there, so that she can communicate and have access to the information and stuff like that. So it's there are just some small things like that that you can do. Just, you know, be aware, be sensitive, and, you know, make sure that the person needs. But I think the other thing too is that if you do have, if you are somebody, especially in the hard of hearing, because you don't notice it as much, if you are somebody that's hard of hearing and you're with a group of people, you need to make it known that, hey, you know, I do, you know, need you to be a little bit more, you know, to do some things to help me out a little bit. 99% of the people out there are going to do that. And stuff. So I just always, it's kind of goes a little bit both ways, I think.
This is Tammy. It's 3:57, you guys. We're just about done. But Ray, that's a really good point. I think another one of the pieces about deaf blindness, it just takes a little more time. Takes a little more time, and whether you're doing things through sign language, whether you need to take a minute to go meet everybody in your workshop in the beginning, you know, make that physical connection with somebody, whether you need to make sure that your room is set up so that people who are hard of hearing either have access to see the speaker or you've got a microphone that works, little tiny things like we had today, you know. We don't start until we've got a policy at the lighthouse. There's no meeting, no Braille, no meeting. If you've got blind people in your meeting and you don't have Braille, you've got handouts, but you don't have any Braille, well, then you don't have a meeting. I'm so sorry to say. No interpreter, no meeting. No FM system, no meeting. You just don't do it. Everybody is respected equally. Ray, you have another?
I was just going to say, that was one of the things I liked about today. I know, you know, I know Karen was not happy that things weren't going right, but she's the chair. She wants it to go well. I understand that. And we all want it to go well. But you know what? The one thing that we did right today, we didn't start this meeting until everything was ready, everything was set up, and then we found a way to kind of work it out. Although I kind of like the idea sometimes of just for fun of having the Braille. I've been in meetings where the Braille stuff has been there and the print stuff hasn't. And, you know, that's kind of fun because then these people get to see how we feel. So, thank you.
Karen, you have a hand up. This is Tammy, too. Sometimes it's fun to just do sign language and see how everybody else feels. Same thing, same idea. Karen.
While Ray raises a very good point, while I was not happy about what happened, it is true, at least we didn't start until everybody had access. And that is truly important and a great point that he makes. It all worked out in the end, though.
AJ, anything you want to add and close with?
No, I'm good.
I don't believe it. Thanks, you guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. And for anyone who is interested, our committee social is tonight at 8 o'clock in the President's Suite. If you have a ticket already, great. Otherwise, it's $15. $29.14.
The question about PT on the back. We didn't get to that. I'm sorry.
Thank you, everybody. And thank you to our speakers, Tammy and AJ.
This is Marlena for ACB Radio, and you have been listening to the 2014 Sight and Sound Impaired Committee program. We hope that you've enjoyed it and that you picked up some valuable information. Stay tuned to ACB Radio for more coverage of the 2014 ACB Conference and Convention from Las Vegas, Nevada.